Hey, welcome to In the Thick. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela, and this is ITT Extra.
All right, so before we go to our main story, you know, we have to because it just feels like everything is getting so close. This tragic shooting on Thursday at a local newspaper, the Capital Gazette in Annapolis, Maryland, a real local newspaper. Mm-hmm. Five of the paper's staff were killed: Rob Hyacin, Wendy Winters, Gerald Fishman, John McNamara, and Rebecca Smith.
Right. Another example, horrific example of gun violence in our country. But now, Maria, it's targeted at the media, at journalists. The alleged shooter, he had a history of legal conflict, and he was violently threatening the newspaper for years. And in the context of this all, right, we have a president that's yelling fake news, saying that the media is the enemy of the people. And one of Trump's biggest supporters, Milo Yiannopoulos, saying just days ago that, and I'm quoting this, he couldn't wait for the vigilante squads to start gunning journalists down on sight. He defended that statement as a joke, but come on, Maria.
No. I'm feeling very...
Seriously?
Yeah. I mean, I think that we should not be surprised that another act of terrorism using guns occurred in our country and that it was directed at the media. It just should not be a surprise when you have a president calling us the enemy of the people. Next Tuesday, we're going to drop our live Aspen show. We were at the Aspen Ideas Festival and we recorded a show live with a great audience all about rage in the Trump era. So we're going to be talking a lot more about violence and violence specifically against journalists. And actually, what a horrible but perfect segue to what we're talking about this week, which is Mexico, because Mexico remains the most dangerous country in the world for journalists. But guys, this is my country of my birth. We are days away from one of the world's largest elections, Sunday in Mexico. Latin America's second largest economy, second to Brazil, will elect over 18,000 positions in their government, including un nuevo presidente, a new president.
Right. So today, joining us from Mexico City is our good friend León Krause, op-ed columnist, host of El Gabfest, which is Slate's first podcast in Spanish. ¿Qué pasa, León? What's up?
¿Qué onda, León?
Hola, Julio, María. Great to be with you.
Now, just this election is huge, León. Polls have not proven to be reliable anywhere, right? But the polls in Mexico are saying that Andrés Manuel López Obrador, a.k.a. AMLO.
Andrés Manuel López Obrador, aquí.
Ahí está apareciendo
en el Estadio Azteca. Le damos la bienvenida.
You're saying, you know, he is the front runner. In your own column in El Universal, you imply that AMLO's situation is a dream, that the governing party, the PRI, the Institutional Revolutionary Party, right, for the PRI, is desperate to retain power. But Mexican President Peña Nieto is like toxic at this point. Mexicans are sick of him and of the entire party, the entire PRI's corruption.
Right. And for all the people that follow Mexican politics, AMLO, yeah, he's a well-known figure. He's the former mayor of Mexico City. He's like the Hillary Clinton of Mexico. He's a three-time presidential candidate. not the same politics, but you know what I mean. He certainly is a complex character. I mean, some say he's a populist. Others look to him for hope. Some say he's a moderate leftist. And then there are the critics who are like, he's going to destroy Mexico's democracy. And in his campaigning, AMLO has said he'll solve the corruption problem.
El principal problema de México es la corrupción.
So, León, just kind of give us the 411 for our listeners, maybe who are not well-versed in Mexican politics. Who is AMLO? How is he involved over these three attempts for the presidency in Mexico? What's his platform? And let's just start there.
Well, his platform is basically himself, Maria, and that's part of the mystery of Andrés Manuel López Obrador. He has repeatedly said over the years, and when I say over the years, I should probably say over the last two decades.
Wow.
He has been running for president over the last two decades. He lost two presidential elections in 2006 by a very narrow margin, and then in 2012 by a considerable margin of over 3 million votes. But he has run obsessively with one single message, and that message has been that Mexico is under the dominion of what he has called la mafia del poder, the power mafia, a bunch of corrupt politicians who have basically hurt Mexico over decades. And López Obrador has said that he himself is a solution to this crisis. How will Mexico solve the corruption conundrum? Through the arrival of López Obrador. Although it sounds strange and slightly Trumpian, that is what he has said. He alone can fix it.
Some of the positions that AMLO has taken, for example, according to the New York Times, they basically say that he's not as progressive, that he's not.
Yeah.
His critics say he's weak on environmental issues, that he's not really down with gay rights, that he's got this left-right alliance.
Yeah.
Juntos Haremos Historia.
Right.
Where you've got some leftist, members of the Morena party, but you've also got
Encuentro Social.
Evangelical party.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who are really super critical of
right.
LGBTQ communities and the issue of abortion. So is he really running on a change, left change, or is it change and left-right kind of change?
I don't see López Obrador as a liberal in any way. That's certainly problematic.
Wow.
Whoa. What do you see him as?
Well, I think he's more of a conservative, certainly on social issues. I mean,
interesting.
He has failed to commit on the agenda that in the United States is so important, especially when one thinks of the Democratic Party or of progressive politicians elsewhere, for example, Jeremy Corbyn in England, who's a good friend of López Obrador. But López Obrador simply hasn't shown any willingness to commit to a progressive agenda when it comes to social issues. And I think that's certainly worrisome.
Yeah.
As to the other part of his agenda, I think López Obrador has tried to build a big tent, more like what the long dominant party in Mexico used to be, this enormous tent in which everyone could meet under. Mm-hmm. He has invited all union leaders, this party that you talk about that is mostly a religious party from the hard Mexican right that until this election was merely testimonial, but now will have representation in the Congress. And he has done this because he wants to win.
Yeah.
And he needs the support of a large sort of coalition. How that will translate into government, I do not know.
Knowing AMLO's history and where he is now, I'm trying to wrap my brain around that. But, Mexico politics, electoral politics in general, it's totally complex in Mexico. We could say that the country's democracy is relatively new, knowing the history of the country, and it's incredibly fragile. So, and then on top of this, you have all this embedded political corruption, León. There's also new obstacles like dealing with fake news. Like, fake news is happening in Mexico. So give us some of that brief context to Mexico's presidential elections. What is this 2018 election building on? And what are some of the current issues surrounding the election?
Oye, pero León, wouldn't you say that the whole notion of fake news and manipulating news? I mean, Mexican governments have been expert at that. That's not really new.
No, I agree with you. Back to Julio's question, I think that the main two issues here, Julio, have been corruption and violence.
Yeah.
Mexicans are obviously fed up with violence. This war has cost hundreds of thousands of lives over the last 12 years. And entire regions of Mexico have suffered greatly. And then, of course, there's corruption. People are absolutely tired of corruption. And this is mainly the PRI's fault. I remember I interviewed Enrique Peña Nieto, the president of Mexico, a couple of years ago. On the record, he told me that corruption was actually a cultural problem for Mexicans. He said that it was part of the country's DNA. And, of course, I immediately disagreed. I pointed out that millions of Mexicans living in the United States are the demonstrably law-abiding and thoroughly honest. But Peña Nieto persisted. I mean, he really told me. Of course, we eventually found out what he meant, because his term in office has been filled with the most outrageous conflict of interest.
he was right.
I feel so insulted by that, as a Mexican.
It's incredible. It's incredible.
So in Mexico, we have these great words, and apparently this election, León, is being called las elecciones del hartazgo.
Yeah.
Así, o sea, estamos hartos.
We are fed
hartos,
up.
Which means like you're fed up. You know, I mean,
sick and tired.
Sick and tired.
Or
and
fucking tired, if you want to.
There it is.
Because that F-bomb has been dropping a lot in Mexico and by some former Mexican presidents, if I'm just saying hello, President Fox. Anyway, so like the situation in Mexico is tan mal. I mean, you've got the inequality.
Absolutely.
You've got the killing of journalists. You've got the killing of women. You've got murdered candidates. You've got disappearance of citizens. You have a narco state. You know, a recent story by Animal Político claimed that for every 100 homicides, only 5 result in a conviction. And you know what?
That's right.
Leon,
that's right.
My cousin, Omerito, may he rest in peace, was one of the five where there was a conviction when he was disappeared. But there's a lot of expectation, just like there was here with Obama, that, you know, he's going to come in. And that's a problem.
It is a problem because, like I said, the new Mexican president, because I think he will win, seems to think that the answer to the country's troubles lie not in the strengthening of our institutions, but quite simply in himself. I mean, he's sort of a magical thinker. I mean, his brand of magical thinking extends to his campaign promises. If you read his book, his campaign book, Maria, you will find the most outrageous promises. He says he will end migration, end poverty, reduce crime by 50%, eliminate corruption. And how will he manage such a feat? Well, he says he will do it through the radiance of his own example. And that's his answer to everything. Honestly, I worry about a man, either in Mexico, the United States, or elsewhere, that thinks that only he can fix things.
You just said that AMLO is Trumpian.
That part of him sounds Trumpian. I heard Trump in the Republican convention say, I alone can fix it. And listen, that's not the way countries work or should work.
Speaking about Trumpian and the U.S. and Mexico, I mean, to say the least, we're at a kind of tense moment, right, between Mexico and the United States.
We are.
With the border, the immigration policy, the global trade war. There's a 25% tariff on Mexican steel. NAFTA negotiations have stagnated. Then Mexico has responded. They say, oh, you're going to tariff us? Like, we're going to tariff you. But it seems like Mexico's election, at least from what I've been following, Leon, and you're on the ground, but it seems to have been focused more on domestic issues than the Trump issue. So with that said, these domestic issues like the narco and state-sponsored violence are largely a result of the U.S.-funded war on drugs. But AMLO has commented some on Trump.
Mm-hmm.
So given the Trump context, given what Trump has said and done against Mexicans in the last couple of years, how is that playing out in the campaign? And if AMLO wins, what the hell's going to happen? I'm just picturing AMLO and Trump together. Are you freaking kidding me?
So you think he'll take that meeting? You think that AMLO will say, yeah, I'll sit down with you, Donald Trump?
Absolutely. No, absolutely. He will sit with Trump, of course. Let me just say this. Of course, the election has turned around or been based on domestic issues. I mean, domestic issues, like I said, corruption and violence are the central themes of the campaign. But still, you know, this was the first time that a presidential debate was held in a border town in Tijuana. I had the privilege of moderating it.
That's right. You did a really good job, too, Leon.
Thank you.
As
thank
a friend,
you.
I tell you that.
Oh, thank you so much. It was a privilege, but mostly it was a privilege because, you know, I am a journalist, a Mexican journalist who works in the United States. So I wanted to bring the perspective of the millions of Mexicans who live in the United States. As to the bilateral relationship, López Obrador has said repeatedly that he will persuade Trump. He will convince Trump that he should rein in his rhetoric.
You mean like with tequila or something like that? Like because
no, no,
I know,
no.
I want to know what he's going to
well,
do.
Well, López Obrador, I don't know if López Obrador drinks, but certainly, Trump doesn't, as we know. So you don't have that fantastic
Mexican manipulation
resource, unfortunately. again, we go back to the idea that López Obrador, how will you deal with Trump? I will charm him. I am the solution. I am the answer to our bilateral troubles. And again, I declare myself a skeptic.
Wow. So is this other thing happening? You know, sabes que, Leon, people actually don't know this about me, but the reason why I actually decided to become a journalist was because I saw Mexican women journalists, not in the United States. I saw them in Mexico.
Yes.
So for me, like, there's this part of Mexico, which is always contestatario, you know, like breaking boundaries and glass ceilings and all of this, like super interesting progressive politics. And of course, We're seeing that here in the United States, right? Young progressive candidates who are running and trying to buck the system. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, for example.
Fantastic.
You know, breaking through the Democratic Party structure. So are there any really super interesting radical candidates that are running in this? Like, and at the same time, like, this is the difference between the United States and Mexico. Yeah. Is like in Mexico, they kill you if you're a candidate. Because, you know, I mean, at this point, what we know is that this has been one of the bloodiest election seasons in Mexico, with over 100 politicians killed. Many of them were candidates. 132 is the number that we're talking about at this point, which is horrible in the last 9 months leading up to this election. But anybody who you're looking at?
Well, the youngest candidate is Ricardo Anaya, who is now the runner-up in the polls and will probably end up in second place in the election. He's, I think, 38 or 39 years old, fluent in various languages, French, English. An interesting figure, to be honest. He has come up with a coalition between the PAN, center-right, and the PRD, center-left parties in Mexico, but it hasn't proven enough, especially in an election defined by outrage, you know. Mm. But I would point to Anaya as the most interesting young figure to come around in a while in Mexican politics, and that's something that that worries me. I don't see that many young figures coming up through the ranks. No one who really, really comes to mind as, you know what, we should follow this guy as the next potential leader in Mexican politics. And that's something, again, that worries me because this country will need that sort of leadership urgently.
But it is pretty sad that in a country so young, like Mexico, that dude, the youngest candidate is 38.
Yes. In that regard, I mean, López Obrador, this current version of López Obrador, he's 64. And I say this current version because, again, he has run twice before. It reminds me of Bernie Sanders. And I hope that, just like it has happened with the Sanders movement, eventually young people, you know, emerge from the idea of a movement and take the reins of progressive politics in Mexico. I consider myself an orphan, a political orphan in Mexico. There's not one candidate that represents my views. I'm a fairly clear progressive across the board, and López Obrador simply does not represent my views as a progressive voter, and I hope that we get to see that kind of left really blossom in Mexico.
We have one final question. This one is called Sin Pendejadas, or as my mom, the original Chilanga, Mexico City, likes to say it. Hey, Mom, take it away.
No bullshit.
So here's the question, Leon.
Uh-huh.
6 years from now, when Mexico is choosing a new president, what's democracy going to look like? If AMLO wins, what kind of shift do you think it's going to mean politically for Mexico? Can a political system really mend Mexico's inequality, injustices, and corruption?
It really worries me, you know, because, of course, with both houses of Congress under his control, I mean, López Obrador will have the opportunity to put his experiment in personal persuasion and populist power to the ultimate test. The question is, where will the Mexican electorate turn next if this man fails to work his magic? The rise of a populist charismatic leader in Mexico is the product of the very severe discontent with Mexican democracy and with Mexican corruption, like I mentioned. So what happens if that populist charismatic leader fails? What comes next? The answer to that, Julio, is I don't know. Mm. But I think it's a question that's important for Mexico, and it's important for many other countries across the globe.
Okay, ¿y te sientes bien, León? ¿Cómo te sientes? Like, yes! Or are you like,
I think that change is mostly always good.
Mm.
And I think that Mexico's outrage needed this sort of shakeup. And I also think it's good that López Obrador and his project and the people that have surrounded him for such a long time will finally get a chance to govern. I don't believe in democracy by quota, certainly, but I think that they do deserve a chance. They have earned it, not only because they have earned it themselves with a very smart campaign and with this sort of obsessive persistence over the years, but also because the PRI and its abuse of power opened the door and basically proved López Obrador right. He could have run under the slogan, López Obrador, se los dije, I told you so. And you know, And so I'm optimistic. What worries me is what I told Julio in the Sin Pendejadas. I don't believe in magic. You see, I don't believe in magic.
All right. Well, that's a wrap for this episode of ITT Extra. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela.
And thank you so much, Leon, for joining us, and have a great time covering politics in Mexico.
Un placer. Thank you both.
Gracias. Gracias, paisano.
Gracias, Leon.
Gracias a ustedes.
Remember, go to Apple Podcasts to rate and review us because it really helps. Follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at In The Thick Show. Like us on Facebook and tell all of your amigos y amigas to listen. In The Thick is produced by Juan Pablo Garnham. Stephanie Lebeau and Nicole Rothwell. Our intern is Sheila Colon. The music that you heard is courtesy of Nacional Captain ZZ Records. We'll see you next time on In the Thick. Thank you so much for listening. We appreciate it. Have a great weekend. Ciao.
Nos vemos. No, can I just say one thing? I was making sure I was rolling, so I was making sure I was recording myself. All right,
I know it's hard for men to do things many times, many things at the same. I understand this.